What it is, this is Tyrus from Fox News, and you're listening to The John Whitmer Show.
Championing the core conservative principles of limited government, individual liberty, free enterprise, and traditional values. This is The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Good evening and welcome to the John Whitmer Show on a lovely balmy Sunday evening. Yeah, it was a hot one, but that's okay. It's been a relatively cool July so far. Hasn't bothered me as much. But then again, I haven't been out door knocking as much as usual, so my poor wife has. Whew! She's been out door knocking in it, and hopefully some candidates have been, because it is that time of year. So kudos. My wife's been putting in 35 hours a week door knocking. I admire her. Holy cow. I couldn't be doing it like she has been. I've been putting in a few hours, but nothing like my wife. So kudos to her and every candidate that's out walking in this heat. I admire you. I admire you guys. Whew. Glad I'm not having to do it. Pleased to have you with us this evening. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. You can call or reach us at 316-869-1330 by email at john@knssradio.com and on Facebook and True Social at The John Whitmer Show. And, of course, on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. A couple quick announcements on events that are coming up. Don't forget, AFP is bringing Guy Benson to Wichita on August 5th. If you'd like information on that, you can visit the John Whitmer Show Facebook page for more information. And my buddy, my good friend Hunter Larkin, is sponsoring another live John Whitmer Show remote. It'll be back at AFP's headquarters at Union Station coming up in 2 weeks, August 10th. It'll be a live broadcast of the John Whitmer Show, and I'm going to tell you at some point tonight who our guests are. We are going to have one heck of a show, though. I will tease one of them now. A few weeks ago, we did this. We did one of these live broadcasts down at AFP's headquarters, sponsored by our friends at Eck Insurance. This time, it's sponsored by Larkin. And he's really appreciate Hunter doing that for us. But one of the highlights of that event the last time was a little debate, sort of conversation, shall we say, with myself and Dion Leffler from the Wichita Eagle. So we're going to bring Dion back. By the way, he called me out in the Wichita Eagle again this week. I don't know if you saw that.
I did see that.
Yeah, and apparently if you support the president and you don't like illegal immigration, you now support ethnic cleansing. That was the latest completely unhinged diatribe that Dion went on. So if you don't support borders and you don't like illegals crossing the border, you're a racist who thinks that we believe in ethnic cleansing, apparently.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. As producer of the show, yeah, I need to come up with a shake my head sounder.
Some kind of Dion Leffler. We need a Dion Leffler intro music.
We'll work on that.
We need to work on that. Maybe one of the, like the Benny Hill show intro music or something like crazy or something. I don't know. We'll need something for Dion. But anyway, so Dion will be one of our guests. Tonight I will reveal the others that we have lined up for you, but it's going to be a great event, and that's August 10th. And I will be creating a Facebook event for that so you can follow up on it. Tonight, we've got a great slew of guests, though. Tina Deshkovich, co-founder and CEO of Moms for Liberty, will join us to discuss why her organization have called on federal lawmakers to revoke the NEA's federal charter. Elizabeth Patton from Americans for Prosperity will explain why they have criticized the $128 million energy rate increase from Evergy. Sarah McMillan will be with us to update us on her campaign for District 1 on the USD 259 Wichita School Board. That's the seat currently held by Diane Albert. There's a large primary there, but we will have had, after tonight, we will have had all the Republicans on the show. Brittany Jones from Kansas Family Voice will tell us about the U.S. Olympic Committee's decision to bar transgender women, in other words, men, from competing in Olympic women's sports. And Ajahnay Bennett will join us to tell us about her campaign for Wichita City Council, District 1. The key is here, she's a Democrat. But if you're a Republican, and there are 10,000 of you registered Republicans who live in District 1, there are no Republicans on the ballot. Ajahnay is more conservative than some of the Republicans I know. She's a solid candidate. We wanted to invite her to come on the show. She'll be with us later on. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. So, good show tonight. Before we get to any of that, though, I want to tell you about a new poll because the wheels are coming off the Democrat Party bus. And it's not just Republican wishful thinking. This is straight from the Wall Street Journal. A new poll just dropped, and it's devastating for the left. They've been... The numbers for the Dems have been bad for a while now, but Democrat approval rating with registered voters has plunged to a 35-year low. 35 years. We're talking since 1990, before Bill Clinton, before Twitter, before most of Gen Z were even born. Just 33% of voters have a favorable view of the Democrat Party, while a staggering 63% see them unfavorably. Translating that into English, two out of three voters have had it with the Democrat Party. And people might say, you know, why is this happening? Why are Americans jumping off the progressive train faster than a taxpayer at a Bernie Sanders rally? And it's simple, because the Democrat Party has no message, no direction, and no clue. They become the party of "we hate Trump," and that's it. No solutions, no vision, no hope. Just the same tired routine of orange man bad, MAGA is fascist, and Republicans are Nazis. And guess what? That message isn't working anymore. It's not resonating with average Americans because people aren't stupid. They look around. They saw that under Democrats, we had record inflation, a broken border, crime out of control, taxes going up, and woke ideology shoved into every corner of their lives. And they said enough. And here's the ticker across the board. Voters trust Republicans more than Democrats to solve the issues that they care about. And it's not just, you know, on the woke stuff. On inflation, arguably the most painful issue hitting America's wallets, voters trust the GOP by 10 points. On immigration, the gap grows to 17 points. And this is a Wall Street Journal poll. It's not a Fox News poll. On handling illegal immigrants, Republicans hold another 17-point edge. I mean, that's not lean, that's a landslide. Even on the tariffs, which the poll showed had 17-point disapproval, Republicans still scored 7 points higher than Democrats. So the public disagrees with the tariffs and still trusts Republicans more than Democrats on trade. That tells you just how broken the Democratic brand is. The donkey is busted. And the Democrat Party isn't just unpopular, it's completely out of touch. They've been hijacked by these radical progressives, these socialists who are pushing an agenda that the mainstream America just flat out rejects. They're pushing radical transgender ideology, telling kids in elementary schools that gender's fluid, biology doesn't matter, that boys can be girls just because they say so, and when parents push back, they get labeled as bigots or transphobes or homophobes or, you know, insert colorful metaphor here. They cheer for biological males in women's sports and then wonder why moms and dads across the country are voting Republicans and taking their kids out of public schools. They've embraced socialism openly as if government-run economies haven't failed every time, everywhere, forever. They call tax cuts greedy, but have no problem sending your money to Ukraine or climate consultants or elephant barns or $600,000 porta potties or $1 billion green energy boondoggles that benefit only their donors. And don't get me started on the woke culture. Americans are tired of being told they're racist, sexist, transphobic, or privileged just because they believe in merit or fairness or want, you know, some kind of accountability in their tax dollars or want means testing. Or here's an idea, transparency or truth. The Democrat Party has become the political arm of the college faculty lounge. They talk down to working Americans. They laugh at religion. They mock tradition. And then they can't figure out why they keep losing working class voters in places like Ohio and Pennsylvania and right here in the heartland. And while they're busy trying to ban gas stoves and force you into electric cars, average Americans are saying, hey, how about you fix the roads and secure the border and lower my grocery bill? And that's why these polls are showing this trend. They don't, you know, American voters don't want more bureaucracy. They don't want more government handouts wrapped in red tape. They just want to work hard, raise their kids, and be left alone. I've said it for years. Most American voters are like the voters in my old House district. Pro-life, pro-gun, get off my porch, folks. But the left doesn't get that. Because the modern Democrat Party isn't the party of JFK anymore. They're the party of AOC, of Gavin Newsom, of Mondami. The modern Democrat Party is the climate of climate hysteria. The modern Democrat Party is the party of drag queen story hour and government dependence. And Americans are rejecting it. So where does that leave us? Well, here's the good news. The GOP has the momentum. We have the trust of voters on issue after issue, on the economy, on immigration, on education, on national security. But, and this is a big but, we can't get complacent. Because trust in polls only matters if we translate that trust into votes. Democrats may be bleeding support, but don't think for one second they won't still fight dirty. They've got Hollywood, they've got academia, most of the media and big tech on their side. They've got money. And they've got no moral compass stopping them from playing every dirty trick in the book. So stay focused. Keep the pressure on. Don't let your friends think this is won. Don't let them get complacent. The collapse of the Democrat Party isn't just a fluke. It's the result of years of arrogance, extremism, and contempt for you, the American people. And they're finally paying the price. Let's make sure we finish the job. We'll take a quick break, and then Tina Deskovich, the co-founder and CEO of Moms for Liberty, will join us to discuss why her organization and others have called on federal lawmakers to revoke the NEA's federal charter. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. Oh, this is a good song. When did you come up with this one, Phil? This is a good one.
Chuck Mangione, rest in peace.
That's right. Chuck Mangione passed. My
just
brother.
Thought this was a
my brother played the trumpet, so this is great. This is a perfect one. We'll be back right after this.
I am Riley Gaines, and you are listening to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
Your phone call is welcome at 869-1330. This is The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
Welcome back to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. I want to remind you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. They're bringing Guy Benson here to town August 10th. You can get engaged, make a difference, and hear from Guy Benson. If you want more information about that, you can visit AmericansForProsperity.org. You also can see the information about the event on the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. And, of course, like and follow our page, and you can find and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, this week, Representative Mark Harris from North Carolina and Senator Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee announced plans to introduce legislation to revoke the National Education Association's federal charter following public outcry over leaked resolutions that have been criticized as partisan and anti-Semitic. Wait, the NEA is partisan? No, say it ain't so. At a press conference Wednesday, Harris stated, quote, "The NEA was created to champion America's teachers and serve our schools, but it has spiraled into a partisan machine that's more about radical ideology than education." Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. With us now to tell us more about the reason many are calling on federal lawmakers to revoke that charter is Tina Deskovich. She is co-founder and CEO of Moms for Liberty. Tina, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
It is great to be here. Thanks so much.
So, you know, you had a quote. I saw this quote. I think it was either with the media or in your press release, but you said that it's an incredibly sad moment in our nation's history when the largest teachers union has put woke politics before America's children. I agree with the statement, but it's not surprising in the slightest, because I think, you know, and I'll give for context, my mother was a teacher. My daughter-in-law is a teacher. My sister's a teacher. I think the NEA, and here in Kansas, the KNEA, have long gone away from representing teachers and just gone into self-propagating themselves for profit. They no longer represent teachers at all, and I don't think they really care about children anymore.
No, they don't. I mean, I admittedly, I've only been following them since we launched Moms for Liberty in 2021, so, you know, a little less than 5 years. But in those 5 years, I've been looking at their annual conferences in the summer where they bring up these resolutions and vote on them. They represent 3 million teachers in our country, and they vote on these resolutions each summer. And over the last 4.5 years, they voted on things like critical race theory, giving land back, solving the problem of, quote, the police and racial justice. They voted on, the only time I've seen them vote on curriculum was to decolonize the curriculum. They support restorative justice. They proposed changing mother to birthing person. I mean, I could go on and on.
And how does any of that improve student outcomes or help teach reading, math, and, or, you know, reading? I mean, how does any of that help a child prepare them for college or career?
It doesn't. And not only does it actually, it detracts
from
the basics of learning to read and to write and to do math. I'm not sure what your listeners know about how the education system is in America right now, but to summarize it all, I could just say that only a third, so 30% of American fourth graders are reading on grade level right now.
Yeah, America. We've gone through that on the show. I think we both follow a friend of ours, Corey DeAngelis, and he really has worked hard to expose some of this. And he actually shared, for reference, the NEA has taken down their 2025 handbook. They have hidden it from the internet. They purged it from the internet. Fortunately, people like Corey, people like you, saved it and are keeping it out there so that they can't hide it. But if you look at their 2025 handbook, it's just outrageous what they wanted to do. For example, just some of the things that they had in the handbook. It does not mention the loss of Jewish lives in the Holocaust. It claims Israel's founding was a violent takeover. And it says educators, quote, must acknowledge the existence of white supremacy culture as a root cause of institutional racism and white privilege. First off, the loss of Jewish lives is actually historically inaccurate, so they're actually teaching falsehoods there. But the rest of that nonsense, how is that even remotely going to help a child learn reading, math, and science?
It's not, and it's propagating anti-Semitism in classrooms across America. They voted just a couple weeks ago in their conference this summer to end a partnership with organizations that fight anti-Semitism. So they're actually moving even from woke radical ideologues into what I would call a dangerous area of anti-Semitism and some other things that our country just, you know, doesn't need. So I'm really thankful for Congressman Mark Harris stepping up and being willing to sponsor this bill and go straight for the jugular with them. And, you know, they've had the NEA has had their charter from the federal government since 1906. They're the only teachers union, the only union, I think, in the United States that has a charter like that. And they do not deserve to keep that.
No. Some more examples. School districts must provide training in cultural competence, implicit bias, restorative practices, and racial justice, whatever those things are. And I love this one. The National Education Association believes that in order to achieve racial and social justice, educational reparations must be made. I have no idea what that is. What do they want? Teaching money, more money so they can pay? What does that even mean?
educational reparations means they want more taxpayer money. And, you know, with no plan, of course, on how that would be given out or appropriated or allocated and who gets what. It's just more money.
More
I mean,
money.
That's the whole argument behind, like, I want my fair share.
Well, right.
What's that? What exactly is that dollar amount? fair share.
That's why on our show, whenever we do a school funding update, we play the Never Enough music from The Greatest Showman, because it is never enough. School funding, it's never enough. They'll always take more money. We're talking with Tina Deskovich, a co-founder and CEO of Moms for Liberty. The handbook also says that homeschooling programs based on parental choice cannot provide the student with a comprehensive educational experience. So they're full out just trashing not only homeschooling, but parental choice as well. They don't like competition, apparently.
They've been going after parents, as you know, for the longest time, but publicly they've been going after parents since, I would say, is it the 2020 election, where
right.
Terry McAuliffe in Virginia, you know, they vocally said, teachers know better than parents. I mean, Becky Pringle, their president, came out and said in 2022, you know, teachers know better than anyone what their students need and how to love them, or something of that nature. And you know, just as a right, well, we were in the fight with, you know, teachers versus parents and what's going on. And so they are there to protect the institution of public education. They have long passed the idea of enriching actual education of children and caring if the individual child is getting an education. They just want to keep protecting that old dying institution that is failing in America.
Well, and, you know, look, I'm not necessarily opposed to public education. Our daughter went to public, you know, Coleman Elementary School here in Wichita, went to Heights High School here in Wichita. I went to both public and private schools through middle school and high school. That being said, it should be up to the parents. If parents want to go to send their kids to public school, they should be. If they want to be able to send them to private school or homeschooling, they should. That should be the point. It should be a choice that's up to the parent. And the issue that I have with this is the NEA, again, it comes back to, I think they're only about the money. Because if they weren't, if they were truly about the child, then I think they'd let the parents have that choice. But go ahead.
No, just absolutely. I was just going to say, I love public education. I too am a product of public education. I served 4 years of my life on my school board here. My children go to public schools right now. They've graduated from the same high school I went to. But that doesn't mean we want to let them run amok. It doesn't mean that they should be wasting taxpayer dollars. And where they're failing, children need to have choices. Parents need to have choices to take those children and put them in other places. So, you know, this isn't about saving public schools or destroying public schools for that matter. It's about the children and education and the future of our country. Because if our children are not learning to read, I mean, if only a third of them are reading, and when you look at the stats in civics and in math and what's happening, we're not going to be able to compete in the world. We're not even going to have an educated citizenry to be able to self-govern. And that puts our country at risk.
No, you're exactly right. Where do you think it stands? Do you think there's a chance that Congress can get this passed, not only through the House, but through the Senate? Or is it, that's a tough lift.
It is a tough lift because, you know, squishy. People are squishy and they're afraid how this is going to be portrayed as attacking teachers, which isn't the case at all. I think it has a good chance of getting through the House. The Senate is always a little bit more complicated, but
yes.
I think it's, you know, I'm hopeful.
Well, I know we've got candidates here in Wichita, particularly at the Wichita School District, and there's some others, Mays, Goddard, Derby. There's some school district candidates here that would certainly love help from your organization. And if folks are interested, if they want more information, they can reach out to Moms for Liberty, and that's F-O-R, so momsforliberty.org, correct?
That is correct. You can join a chapter, start a chapter, get more information. Just sign up for our newsletter and get more information. We have a lot of things going on, and we help get school board members elected. We help get state policies and federal policies passed. We're a very active grassroots on the ground organization.
We have some very competitive districts right now, some very competitive races here in Wichita. So appreciate you, Tina. Thank you very much for your help. Keep up what you're doing and carry on the fight, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, Sarah McMillan will be with us to update us on her campaign for election to the USD 259 Wichita School. Speaking of one of those school board races, you're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this.
This is Dana Lash, and you're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk.
Live Sunday nights, this is the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. I want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS. And, of course, make sure you listen to KNS on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn apps. And make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Don't forget, coming up in 2 weeks, we will do our live remote from AFP's headquarters, thanks to my buddy Hunter Larkin. One of our guests, we'll wait. We'll stick around. I'll tease you, but we've already teased. We'll have a discussion with my friend Dion Leffler from the Wichita Eagle. We got two other guests we've already arranged for that night. We'll share those with you here coming up in a few minutes. Every election cycle, we try to bring you as many candidates running for local, state, and federal office as we can. Well, we're going to have one more coming up in the next hour, but in the meantime, each week we'll bring you as many as we can between now and Election Day. If you'd like to hear from somebody in particular, let us know. We'll reach out to them. That being said, joining us now is Sarah McMillan. She is running for District 1 on the Wichita School Board, USD 259. That's the seat currently held by Diane Albert. Sarah is a military family life consultant and a course instructor at Brown Mackey College. Sarah, thank you for joining us. It's nice to have you on the show. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Those are really old, though, on my resume.
Well, it's what I found. So
I appreciate it.
You know, I was like, okay, where is it? That's what I found.
I own a small private practice for psychotherapy.
Oh, okay. Well, Phil needs some of that. So before you leave, I'll flip behind the board there.
There we go.
I'll run the board. You can take Phil. We've got a couch over in Tony's office. You can give him a free consultation, and he can, you know, cry for 20 minutes or so.
You're going to probably need about 30 minutes.
That's okay. I'm sure people think the same thing about me. So let's start with what prompted this? Why'd you decide to run for office?
Well, education is extremely important to me. As you can see, like I've taught at elementary, middle school, high school, college, both the community college level and the university level. I have gotten my PsyD, Doctor of Psychology. It's just, we need a well-educated community. Our children need education, and I want to make sure that we protect that.
You're a registered Republican, and yet you're running against a fellow Republican, an incumbent. Were you unhappy with Diane's performance in office? And why run against a sitting Republican?
Well, I've just heard from different people within the community that they felt like maybe they didn't have quite as much access to the board or their voices weren't as heard. And I just thought I would throw my hat in there and see if maybe I couldn't be that person for them.
Fair enough. Nice for someone who's never run for office. That was a very nice non-political, non-answer way not to attack your opponent, which is fine. I mean, you've obviously had some training, so that's good. So you obviously didn't have the opportunity to vote in favor of the bond. But I will ask, had you been on the board, would you have voted for the first bond? Looks like they're looking to do a bond in November. If you were on the board, would you support the next bond?
As for the first bond, I don't know all the details of that, so I don't know where my vote fully would have been. However, for one coming up, with the lack of funds that are going to be coming in, I know some have been released back into it for certain programs. If there was the right accountability and it was going to the correct programs that were in need, I would absolutely vote for it.
So do you consider, now keeping in mind that it is a tax increase.
Right.
Do you think that that's worth it considering their academic achievements, considering the fact that we've had, and we'll get to performance here in a few, but do you still think it's worth it considering?
Well, considering that we are removing funding that is coming in, or there is that possibility, and we're trying to have that pushback.
How so? You mean from the federal government?
From the federal.
They've already filled that.
I just saw that go through. Okay. But if we're looking at trying to push more funding back to the local area and not relying on federal as much, then we need to have that coming from somewhere.
Okay. That one we'll disagree on,
yes.
But that's okay. So right now in Wichita Public Schools, just 19% of students are proficient in reading. Even worse, 16% are proficient in math. That means that more than 8 out of 10 are not at grade level on basic subjects. How would you propose to fix that?
Well, I think maybe this might be a disagreement for some other people as well. But from my time within schools, I've noticed that if we're not meeting their basic needs, if they're coming to school hungry, they don't know where they're going to sleep at night, they're exposed to violence at home, and they don't have any mental health support, they're not going to perform. They're not going to be at that capacity to learn or retain information. So we have to find a way to meet those needs and create an environment of safety so that they can learn.
So, but is that the school district's responsibility to do that? And how would you pay for that then?
Well, that would be some of those things that you'd want to look at as far as where is all of our funding going? Is there programs that aren't necessary and are unneeded that we could pull money from that? Are there things that could be picked up on? The community-centered approaches with education that have become successful in some areas have been able to pick up that point and create this space where it's not just like the school or taxes that are paying it, but the community comes together and they donate to the school. They help fund those programs. Other community organizations come in.
So doing it not with taxpayer dollars, but rather with public private partnership.
That would be my ideal.
I see in there, we would agree because you're not using taxpayer dollars. So I would agree with you in that regard. Wichita Public Schools reported a record high graduation rate of 84% for the class of 2024, which is a 5% increase from the previous year. Graduation rate has risen nearly 14% since 2018. So the graduation rates are going up. And yet, 2/3 of 10th graders scored in the bottom level on the state math tests in 24. Amongst black students, nearly 80% scored in the bottom level. So do you question any of that at all? Is there something? Because it seems like the math isn't working out. They're graduating kids that aren't meeting basic requirements, that can't do basic math, and yet they're still graduating them. Do you see a problem with that?
I want to know how many of them were actually on learning plans, because I know learning plans do impact on what criteria has to be met in order for graduation. I'd also want to know exactly if there have been changes on how they do the data points for graduation rate.
There has been, yes. They've changed, and they've changed the standards, basically. So Basically what it seems like is they're tweaking the tests in order to make it easier to graduate. Do you believe in holding students back if they haven't met minimum standards?
If they're provided all that opportunity and it's not a learning disability issue,
right.
Then they need to be able to have that foundation before they move on.
So if they're not meeting basic standards, they should be held back.
Yes.
I would agree with you there. Let's see. I don't want to keep repeating as much as I can. Kansas has seen significant rises in K-12 spending with a 53% increase over the last 10 years. And yet math reading scores on standardized tests, including NAEP scores, have either stagnated or declined. Do you think Wichita Public Schools are adequately funded?
So I do not like a standardized test.
Sure.
As someone who
I think everyone would agree.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's the only standard that we have. It's what we have to work with.
That's what needs to be adjusted.
Sure.
But
unfortunately, that's the only way we have to metric. So unless you get the legislature or the school board to fix it. But since that's the metric we have, do you think they're adequately funded?
See, I would advocate for changing those metrics.
Sure.
And then if those metrics were a true representation of what is going on within the classroom and with that student, then that would give a clearer picture about what funding is needed. As someone who's always kind of been within the school system, I can tell you that some schools are overfunded, and then same within that same district, some schools are severely underfunded. I've been within that same small district where one school has closets full of paper and tools and everything. And in another school that the teachers are begging for paper to be sent in and they can't even make copies on their own. And it's out of that same funding source. So every school needs to be funded. So I do not believe every school is probably adequately funded.
Do you believe in do you like the idea of consolidating within a district that says maybe instead of each school buying their own, maybe consolidating through the entire district so that everything is purchased at a hub and therefore then we can combine resources that way?
Well, and I have seen where that has been successful. And where once they send in their request, the only problem that ever has happened with having a hub center is the delay in getting what they need. And so if there was a way to make sure there was no delay with getting the needs that the teacher needs to, for that classroom, I think that I have seen where it's been very successful.
Oh, good. Do you mind if we stick around through the break?
Sure.
We'll take a quick break, and then we'll continue our conversation with Sarah McMillan, candidate for USD 259 District 1. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk.
Hey, you lucky people out there. This is Kevin Sorbo. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show with John Whitmer on KNSF. Have a wonderful, God bless day.
Your phone call is welcome at 869-1330. This is the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
With us still is Sarah McMillan. She's a candidate for USD 259, Wichita School Board District 1. Sarah, so let's talk. Back to last year, the Kansas legislature passed a bill that gave them a pay raise, and part of the bill allowed school board members who are not paid to get a pay raise, basically, so that school board members who traditionally do not receive pay can now. Some districts are therefore considering paying board members. They would be paid through the general fund. So in other words, taxpayer dollars that would or could be going into the classroom would be diverted to pay salaries for board members. Do you support paying board members? And if it passed, would you accept a pay raise or pay for board?
I would want the money to go to the schools, honestly. I feel like that we need to make sure people who are in this are in it for the schools and not for our own personal gain. And so, no, I don't believe that I support that.
I tend to agree with you on that one. USD 259 Superintendent Kelly Bielfeld just received another pay raise. He already received a 3% pay raise as part of the standard pay increase given to all teachers. Considering, again, the college and career readiness scores, the NAEP scores, recent graduate scores, some of the other issues that have come up, the failed bond, the issue at one of the schools recently where they caught a teacher who was changing grades. Do you believe that Bielfeld deserved the second pay raise?
From the information that you've provided me, it does not sound like it. It would be my preference that that funding go to the classrooms, to the teachers, the paras, the teacher assistants.
What about by the way, Phil, my wife just texted and said that was a lady. It's a classic and I should not be picking on you for playing it. So, in which case, let me take that back and say great intro music, Phil. What about school choice? What are your thoughts on school choice and parental choice in education?
Oh, I know I disagree with a lot of people on this too.
Well, it is a core plank of the Republican Party platform. So,
well, as someone who has had experience being homeschooled, homeschooling my kids, having my kids go to private school, having them go to public school, I am seeing rural schools really getting hurt with school choice, and not because of not being able to provide adequate education for them, but because there's better opportunities for sports in other schools, or there's this in other schools. And so then we are seeing where these rural schools are having to consolidate or are shutting down, and kids are being bused an hour or more to get to their new school that they have to go to. And then they're not having as many resources, or we're finding schools that, like, especially in northern Kansas, that they can't get teachers because of a lot of that stuff going on. So they have open positions, but they're going to go to different schools where they...
So isn't that the market? Isn't that parental choice? I mean, so we have to use taxpayer dollars to keep a public school open because parents don't want their kids to go there. So we should force kids to go there because, oh, well, the school might...
But who does that hurt? What about the kids and parents who maybe don't want their kids to go, that don't have access to means and aren't able to go anywhere else?
That's why you allow the taxpayer dollar to follow the students. So therefore, then those kids could afford to go to private school. I mean, case in point, the $7,000 is the average cost right now for private school in Wichita. You know what the taxpayer funding for public schools in Wichita is? $16,000. It's more than twice the cost of private school. So it costs you twice as much to send a kid to public school in Wichita as it does to private school. I can pay. I could send two kids to privates to Catholic school for what I pay one kid to go to public school in Wichita. So right now, you literally are spending more in a public school than you are in a private school education in Wichita.
Well, a lot of those private schools don't. They're utilizing public school resources for special education and servicing IEPs.
A few, but not many.
And I mean, that's where a lot of money.
We can fix that. So we can tweak that. But by and large, if we're, I mean, really, ultimately, what it comes down to is it should be up to the parents, though. But okay, I get what you're coming from. How about the Supreme Court recently sided with parents who want to opt their children out of LGBTQ books in schools? Do you agree with that decision?
Who's going to be monitoring and deciding that? That is my other thing. So,
well, it would be monitored by the so if that book is in the curriculum for that day, a parent would be able to say, "I don't want my child to read that day." They can do independent study. They can go to the library. I don't want my child reading that book. Do you agree with that decision?
I would say it depends on what the content of that is supposed what is going on and how that is going.
So
who addressed.
So you don't think the parent should have that right to opt out?
I don't know that it's necessarily a situation where every single day that we're trying to figure out what books are going to be presented in what areas and is that actually going to have specific content when I'm a house. So, and this goes, I know this isn't exactly what you asked, but I see more people pushing for that when I have known of situations where there have been teachers and coaches who were sexually assaulting kids and they were being supported because they were Republicans and no one wanted to remove them from their position.
Okay.
So if we're going to try to safeguard our kids, we need to safeguard them from actual threats.
Two quickies. Do you support the idea of keeping boys out of girls' sports?
There needs to be clear linear decisions. If this is that sport, that is that sport.
No boys and girls sports. Gotcha. If folks are interested, I know I'm up against it. If folks are interested, they can find you at Sarah McMillan on Facebook, correct?
That is correct.
Sarah, thank you. Best of luck to you.
I appreciate it.
I am Riley Gaines, and you are listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
Championing the core conservative principles of limited government, individual liberty, free enterprise, and traditional values. This is the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. KNSS is always here for you. Let's keep it that way. Tell your legislators to keep AM radio in vehicles by texting AM to 52886 and tell Congress to keep AM radio in cars. And while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and true social pages and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Real quick, I will share another guest for our live broadcast brought to us by my buddy Hunter Larkin coming up on August 10th at AFP's headquarters. The great one, Mark Levin, will be with us. So make sure you tune in. You can be with us live. Mark will not be here in Wichita, by the way, but Mark Levin will be with us on August 10th for our live broadcast from AFP. So and we've got one more guest to announce for our live broadcast at AFP. So the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee quietly changed its eligibility rules on Monday to bar transgender women, in other words, men, from competing in Olympic women's sports. And now they'll comply with President Trump's executive order on the issue, according to a post on the organization's website. They rolled it out, but they did it real quiet-like, so nobody would notice. The order specifically calls on the Secretary of State to ensure that the International Olympic Committee adopts policies that ban males from women's sports. With us now to tell us about the decision is Brittany Jones from Kansas Family Voice. Brittany, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show as always, my friend.
Thanks so much for having me, John. It's exciting to get to talk about a victory, even from the Olympic Committee.
Yes, yes. Well, it took them long enough. I mean, we only had to deal with the last Olympics when a male beat the crap out of a female and won a women's Olympic gold medal.
Well, and the NCAA did this in February, which I'm no proponent of the NCAA, but really, it took until July?
Yeah, so. It is kind of sad that it took this long. You know, we passed protection from women's and girls' sports, and I know other states have been doing that. But it's sad that states are taking the leads here, and now we're finally having to get the Olympic Committee to do it. And of course, I did think it was pathetic that they did so real quiet, like hoping nobody would notice.
Yeah, I mean, they know that the public is not on their side. And I mean, I think that's the beauty of people really speaking out over the last 5 years, and people like Riley Gaines sharing their story, telling what really happens in these locker rooms and what really happens when women are forced to compete against biological men. And so those stories mattered, and they made a difference, and it helps when you win elections. And these are the results. I wish it would have happened faster, but we'll take it and we'll celebrate the victory.
It does help that we've had people like Riley who, and you know, it's funny because I always reminisce about being the first interview that she ever did. But I'm so grateful for people like her and some of the others who have come forward, because I mean, I remember when she started, how they demonized her, how they attacked her, how you know, at the University of San Francisco when they locked her in the meeting room and then basically held her hostage, and the university wouldn't let her out for 5 hours or something like that. You know, it's sad, and we're making progress, but it really is incremental progress, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we started this fight in Kansas in 2021, and there were so many brave Kansas women and girls who came forward and shared their stories. It will forever be one of my favorite campaigns to work on, just because of the number of women who came forward. You know, people like Caroline McAndrews out in Wichita, who she was an Olympic athlete, and she knew exactly what it meant and what it would mean for her daughters if we didn't pass the Fairness Women's Sports Act. And she was willing to share her story. And then you have people like Riley Gaines who are sharing that nationally. Right. And I mean, I was an athlete when I was much younger, but it matters, and it makes such a difference in these girls' lives. And to have those opportunities taken, even if it's just one male on their team, it has a catastrophic impact down the line for the number of opportunities that girls have.
I like to think of, I mean, I think it was what I like to call her my favorite state senator, Renee Erickson. I think that was one of the first bills she ever carried.
Yes, it was.
And you know, and I think partly because she was a female athlete.
Yes.
And you know, to think of how she was demonized by, I mean, they just ripped her. I mean, death threat. Yeah. All the names that she was called, people like that, and what a champion she has become.
Yeah, and I think that was just a beautiful thing to watch her stand in the pocket in that battle. You know, so many, Barb Wassinger, Susan Humphries, Christy Williams. I need to be careful naming off names because I missed somebody. Kelly Warren.
Yes,
many women.
Susan Estes. You know, was it? Yeah,
Susan Estes, all of them. Yeah. Like, they stood in the pocket. They took the heat. They were fighting for their daughters. They were fighting for the granddaughters. And that's one of my favorite moments in one of Renee's closing speeches, because she's given many on Fairness Women's Sports because the governor kept vetoing it.
Our middle of the road governor?
Yeah. What? How many times did you veto it? Three, four times.
Right.
And you know, Renee is sitting there in tears. She has a picture of her granddaughters on her desk, and she's just sharing how basketball impacted her life and how she wants that for her daughter, her granddaughters. And I mean, it's just, there's a clip on YouTube. I encourage you to go find it. But it was just a beautiful moment of, this is what we're fighting for. This is why we're doing this. We're not doing this because we hate anybody. We're doing this because we actually care.
We're talking with Brittany Jones from Kansas Family Voice. Early on in the conversation, you mentioned medals, and you know, I think it also came up in the context of the Olympics when the biological male won a gold medal in women's boxing.
Yeah.
Kansas Attorney General Kobach is joining 15 other states urging the NCAA to restore women's records that have been broken by male athletes. I know that's something that your organization is helping to push for that, correct?
Yes, absolutely. We are so thankful for Chris Kobach and all those other attorney generals who are not satisfied with from here on out, we'll do the right thing. No, they need to go and do the right thing for all those women over the last decade who have lost opportunities. People like and other women whose names we may never know, who were forced off of teams or forced off the podiums because men, for some reason, needed that validation.
The phrase that I've heard you use is stolen valor. And yes. and that's not just, I mean, this is, we can't do anything about the other stuff they lost. The pride, the sense of achievement, the scholarships that they may have lost, the opportunities. Yeah. We can't restore those, but we can at least restore the records and restore the championships.
Yeah, medals and records are knowable, right? Like, we know who should have won those. We can look at times, we can look at all of those things, and we know who should have won those medals and those records based on biological fact.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
And so those things we can't go force them to go back and rewrite history, but we can do something about the factual record. And so we are hopeful that they will heed that plea from the attorneys generals, and we're going to keep pushing for it. And we know that there's a big Supreme Court case coming up on this very issue in this next term. So we're going to be watching that very closely.
Well, and you know, one of the things I keep telling folks is as we're gearing into a governor's election, this is a very important issue for who emerges from. Obviously, if there's a Democrat, then we're just going to have four more years of Laura Kelly. And I don't care if it's Ethan Corthon or Cindy Holscher, they have
the same record.
Exactly. It's going to be another 4 years of Laura Kelly. But there's also some Republican possibilities that may be another 4 years of Laura Kelly. And so we do need to be careful in the Republican race as well to make sure that we get a solid conservative. And so I think it's incumbent that we do your job as voters to vet these candidates, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's one candidate who's already declared for the Republican primary who's voted against almost every life bill and voted against the Adoption Protection Act. And that's just really concerning to me. As a pro-family organization, you can say everything you want, but when your voting record shows that you chose not to stand up for life, not to stand up for families, I can't count on you to be on our side when we need you.
And you know where I stand on that. I helped to carry that bill. So, I voted for that bill. So that one's personal to me as well. So, folks, if folks are interested, if they want more information, if they want to help you, if they want to donate, if they want to get involved, they can find more information at KansasFamilyVoice.com, correct?
That's right. And we're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or send us an email. Sign up for we send out an email every week. Feel free to engage with us on that. We'd love to have you along for the ride.
Brittany, I appreciate you as always. Carry on the fight, my friend.
Thank you, John. I appreciate you.
You know, we're going to carry on this trend. I now realize what you've done here, Phil. We have all female guests tonight. Now I get the whole lady thing in the music soundtracks. Okay, we'll take a quick break, and then Elizabeth Patton from Americans for Prosperity will explain why their organization has criticized the proposed $128 million energy rate increase with Evergy. You're listening to John Whitmer. Now I get it. Okay, see, you're smarter than the average bear. We'll be back right after this.
This is Carrie Lake, and you're listening to the John Whitmer Show on KNSS.
Your phone call is welcome at 869-1330. This is the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you about my friends at Americans for Prosperity. They're bringing Guy Benson to Wichita coming up on August 5th, and they're hosting our live broadcast on August 10th. Great ways for you to get engaged, make a difference. You can find out about both events by visiting the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. I'll give you another guest. So not only are we going to have Mark Levin at our live, well, not at, but on our live show on August 10th, and we're going to have a little debate, conversation between me and Dion Leffler, but Congressman Ron Estes will be with us live at AFP's offices on August 10th. So we're going to have a great show, so make sure you come to that. Come to the Guy Benson event. If you want more information, you can visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Sign up, get more information, and make your voice heard. And, of course, like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page as well. Earlier this week, AFP criticized the proposed $128 million energy rate increase by Evergy, calling the move a money grab by a state-backed energy monopoly. If approved, the rate hike would result in an overall increase of 9.6% for homeowners, a little under 9% for most businesses, and over 9% for schools and churches. Schools, you know, let's just jack their energy rates. With us now to explain how this could impact average Kansas ratepayers and why they're opposed is Elizabeth Patton from AFP Kansas. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Thank you. Thanks for having me this evening. Hope you're well.
Yes, likewise. No rate increase is acceptable at a time when Kansas are already overwhelmed by, you got rising energy, you got property taxes going up. At least we're not in inflation right now, knock wood. But it everything else seems to be going up. I went and I watched some of the hearings that Evergy had when they came here to Wichita State, to the campus. How are they justifying this yet another 10% basically rate increase?
You know, I frankly don't think it is justifiable. We've seen rate increase after rate increase year after year, and they are consistently filing rate increases with the Kansas Corporation Commission. And that's our question. They are a state-sanctioned monopoly. We know that a lot of these increases are actually going to the salaries for their executives, and they claim that they need these rate increases for transmission builds, and that might be the case. That's partially how they make money. But at the end of the day, they are way beyond the pale on what Kansas actually needs, what ratepayers need, what is actually what is sustainable for our state and what makes sense. Right now, they are negotiating down somewhat from a 15% increase to a 9% increase, but that is still untenable in our mind. It's not like a regular business. By no means do I fault anyone for making a profit, but when you're a state-sanctioned monopoly, that's different, and this amounts to about a tax increase.
Well, and when you mention it, the profit, I'm with you. I mean, every business is entitled. We want businesses to be profitable.
Right.
But
right.
I saw, and one of the, I think it was Kim Gish who actually asked them at that forum, they reported last year almost $1 billion in profits.
Yep.
So I'm sorry, if you're making $1 billion in profits, what difference is this little 9% rate? You know, it's come on, guys. You're attacking a little old Mary Beth who's selling doilies online in order to help pay her property taxes. This is just going to be yet one more little death by a thousand cuts for her.
It is death by a thousand cuts, and it's continued like a percentage upon a percentage upon a percentage, and it adds up. And what they're doing is they are sending more and more Kansans, especially people on fixed incomes, the elderly, folks like that, into what we call energy poverty, which means they are having to spend more than 29% of their income on utilities. And we see that more and more. And as every rate increase they file, that gets approved by the Kansas Corporation Commission, who we also think bears more accountability in this. Then it's just, again, it's death by a thousand cuts, and it's a percentage upon a percentage. And when does it end?
Well, that's my next question. How do we, because you're right, I think every time we see these, they come in at 20%, they end up getting 10. So you and I both know that means they know to ask for 20 when they only need 10, because they know that's what they're going to get.
Right.
How do we stop this? At what point what is it going to take? Do we need a new KCC? Do we need to do away with the KCC? What's it going to take?
So I happen to think we do need to add transparency and accountability to the Kansas Corporation Commission. And I think that could look like a few different things. That could look like more corporation commissioners. It could look like corporation commissioners that are brought in a different way. So we can add more transparency to the process of how they are chosen. Some people have floated, maybe we do need to elect our corporation commissioners if they're in charge of this. Perhaps we need to look at adding accountability in that way. I also think we need to look at a lot of our statutes. I think that the legislature has an opportunity to take back some places where we have ceded that authority to, again, unelected bureaucrats.
Right.
And I think there's an opportunity to make some regulatory changes that make sense, but also add that transparency and accountability to the Corporation Commission to make sure that we're lowering energy costs for Kansans. We're still one of the highest in the region, and it doesn't have to be that way for our state. Absolutely, it does not.
We're talking with Elizabeth Patton from Americans for Prosperity. And I know whenever I get a chance to talk to you, I always want to take a minute and come back to one of the biggest issues that we're going to see on the ballot next year, which is judicial selection. And the reason I bring this up is because we did. I was fortunate enough. I was asked to MC with my buddy Andy Hoosier the Kansas State Rifle Association convention a couple weeks ago up in Topeka, and yeah. Talk about a group of conservative, you know, liberty minded folks. And I mean, this is GOP based. This is folks that you would assume are right with us. And this issue, the judicial selection issue, came up in a conversation with a couple of them. And there were a few people even in that crowd who were already saying things like, well, money in politics, or we don't want to keep politics out of that process. They're already starting to hear that narrative that's going to come from the Trial Lawyers Association, from the left, from the. How is it that we are going to help, you know, educate voters on the truth, on the reality of this, of the importance of this constitutional amendment next year?
You know, part of it is, as you know, we were there at the KSRA event as well, tabling to try to educate folks and have those conversations. We're on doors right now. We're doing a lot of those types of activities, events, things like that to help that. But it's even things like this where I hope people take the time to go to our website, takebackthebench.com, and learn more about our current process. Kansas is an outlier process. And what we think is, you know, we trust Kansans. We trust Kansans to elect our governor. We trust Kansans to elect their lawmakers. They're in the 4th District. You guys already elect all of your judges. We have seen that be a fantastic process and has yielded some fantastic justices right there locally. And we think that can be brought to the rest of the state, and we can trust Kansans to have their say over their government and not leave that to one right now. Right now, there are judicial elections in Kansas, but the only people who get to vote are lawyers. And I think that everyone should have a vote, not just lawyers.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of putting it, because right now it is. It is just a bunch of elite lawyers, and that's not a democratic or transparent process for that matter.
Right.
Elizabeth, the two events coming up on the 10th. You will be broadcasting live from your offices at Union Station. I've already shared three of the guests. We'll have the great one, Mark Levin. We'll have a forum, conversation, debate, whatever you want to call it, between myself and Dion Leffler, and 4th District Congressman Ron Estes will be there. And then coming up on the 5th, you've got an AFP policy dinner with Guy Benson at the Wichita Union Stockyards, correct?
That's right. That's absolutely right. We're very excited to have him in. He's going to be talking about this very thing with judicial selection and the constitutional amendment. So if you have questions and want to learn more, great chance to stop by and hear that. And I hope people RSVP. You said you have the link on your Facebook page.
Right.
And that would be great to make sure they have a seat at a table on Tuesday the 5th.
Well, and chow is included. Great dinner. Chow's included, right? But they do need to register.
They do. They do. They do need to reserve their seat. We need to make sure we got food for everybody. So it's a free event, but you do need to RSVP. So go to that link on John Whitmer's Facebook page and register, or you can go to our social media as well and make sure you get that registration link put in so we can make sure you've got a seat.
Elizabeth, I appreciate you as always. And you guys, I know, are still hiring. You're still getting door knockers out there. You do your days of action on the third Saturday of every month. So carry on the work. Keep up the fight. We appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate you as well.
We'll take a quick break to pay a few bills, and then I want to introduce you to Anjanae Bennett. She's a Democrat. Don't ever say we never take Democrats on the show, but she's a Democrat. She's running for Wichita City Council District 1, but I want to introduce you to her because if you're a registered Republican, and there are 10,000 of you, by the way, in District 1, and you're looking for someone to vote for, I want to introduce you to her. 316-869-1330 is the studio line. We'll be back right after this.
This is Dana Lash, and you're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk.
Live Sunday nights, this is the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. Want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS or by listening to KNSS on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn apps. And, of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Was Ajene Bennett is one of five Democrats running for the District 1 seat on the Wichita City Council. But she's sort of like that old Sesame Street skit. Remember this? One of these things is not like the others. Well, she's a little bit different than the other four contestants for the race. The seat, which represents central northeast Wichita, is currently held by Councilman Brandon Johnson, who cannot seek re-election due to term limits. There are no Republicans on the ballot. And with over 10,000 registered Republicans in District 1, she is the only choice for GOP voters. She's more conservative, frankly, than some elected Republicans I know. And I wanted to give her a chance to speak to this audience. Ajene is an insurance broker for Trinity Insurance and Financial Services. She had served as president of the Northeast Millaire Neighborhood Association for 8 years and came to the greater community's attention 3 years ago when she sounded the alarm about the toxic spill that had contaminated much of the groundwater in her neighborhood. Ajene, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Good evening to everyone, and thank you, John, for this historical opportunity to be a part of a truly historic election. I'm honored, humbled, and ready to serve with courage, compassion, and commitment to our community's future.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, and let me start by asking this. And you're not the first Democrat I've had on the show. I've had lots of them, but Would it be fair to say, because you and I have talked, we talked the other day, and I think it would be fair to say you don't necessarily consider yourself a partisan politician. Just from our conversation, I'm proudly partisan. I pride myself on being a radical Republican, as you know, some of the left call me a crazy conservative, but that's fine. I'll take that. But you didn't seem to come across that way. You don't consider yourself necessarily a partisan, do you?
I don't. This is a nonpartisan race, and I'm a leader that fights for everybody in District 1. My doors will be open to everyone's concerns at any time. I'm here for everybody.
Well, and one of the things that I found most fascinating in our conversation was, you know, some of the things that you and I both had in common was, for example, you weren't a particular fan of Mayor Whipple. You also, some of the things that was your ideas on what the priorities for spending in the city. For example, you opposed ideas like the $600,000 porta potties. You weren't a big fan of the annual budget for the arts as long as the city is facing a budget shortfall. And I'm with you on that, because look, if we're replete with money and we've got lots of excess, I would say that should be returned to the taxpayers, but especially when we're facing a budget shortfall, that's the time when you need to tighten your belt. And you, I think, were along those same lines.
I am. City Council needs to stop being frivolous with our tax dollars. They need to review and revise the developers' incentives and hold them to the terms of the contracts. We all know what happened in Kenmore and with the ice rink. We don't need that kind of going on.
Well, and one of the biggest... Sorry, go ahead.
I'll be there to make sure to prevent those big losses, because that's just... It's not feasible for me.
One of the biggest frustrations that I've seen is these no bid contracts where you've got and don't get me wrong, I'm all for developers and working with the city and public-private partnerships, and we have to have incentives, because if you're not competitive, then they're just going to go elsewhere. But at the same time, there has to be clawbacks, there has to be transparency, and there has to be accountability. And it seems for many in the city council, including, frankly, the departing Councilman Brandon Johnson, there hasn't been some of that transparency and accountability.
There hasn't been any transparency and accountability. I spoke with Councilman Johnson personally and let him know that he has been a failure to me and this community, and I'm not the only one that feels that way.
You know, one of the things in your platform that you emphasize is improving the quality of life for people in the community, and increased transparency in the community, and sustainable solutions for health and affordable housing. And I like the idea of maintaining the concept that it's sustainable, because a lot of people will run on solutions, but not sustain, because you've got to have practical solutions. They can't just be pie in the sky notions.
Exactly. They cannot. I mean, as president of the Northeast Miller Neighborhood Association and a lifelong resident of District 1, I've witnessed the lasting harm of redlining and housing discrimination in East and Northeast Wichita, because I've lived here all of my life. And I've also fought for it by advocating for equitable development, working with Habitat for Humanity, and supporting tenants through Justice Together. But my intent is I'll champion homeownership programs, financial education, and infrastructure improvements in historically excluded neighborhoods so families can build wealth and stay rooted in their communities. Housing is a human right, and I'm committed to making sure that District 1 provides the sustainable projects that people will be there for a long time, you know?
We're talking with Ajene Bennett, who's a candidate for Wichita City Council District 1. You know, it was interesting. I heard one of the comments that you made at the district forum, and there were some folks. I mean, I got to tell you, there are a lot of people in that forum that are left of me, but there are folks in that forum that were left of you. And one of the things that I saw in the video that I watched, you talked about an interesting metaphor that you use, that it's a lot easier. It's harder in your district to get a tomato, a fresh tomato, than it is to get a gun in your district. And absolutely. I thought that's a sad statement of affairs. And don't get me wrong, I'm a Second Amendment advocate, but that's not what you were referring to. You were talking about food deserts and how we need to find ways to incentivize, not like Mondami in New York, where he wants government to step in and build grocery stores, but how you could find private sector incentives for that, correct?
Exactly. I'd like to see our local farmers, such as Common Ground, they're already gathering produce from our local farmers and providing it to citizens all across the state, not just here in Wichita. And I'd like to see more incentives like that. That'll boost our economy, too.
You know, the other thing that I saw, and I was very pleased to see this, you were endorsed by Kansans for Life. Which,
yes, I'm excited.
I don't know how long it's been that a Democrat has been endorsed by Kansans for Life. I mean, it's a rarity, it seems like, because I thought the Democrat Party had purged all the pro-life Democrats from their party. And I was so pleased to see that. And it's not a sad statement on KFL. It's a sad statement on the Democrat Party, because it seems like they don't allow themselves to have any pro-life Democrats anymore.
They don't. Well, they can't get rid of me. I am here to stay. And I am definitely pro-life. For me, conception begins. I mean, life begins at conception. And yes, there. I believe, and I'll speak as a woman. If it's an atopical pregnancy, if there's incest involved, if there is rape involved, the dynamics of those horrible situations are going to be so diverse that they need options. What good is birthing a child and the mother dies and she's not here to live, to take care of it, or the child dies?
Well, many pro-lifers support those kinds of exceptions. So that's not
right. That's it for me. I mean, at 16 years of age, you can go to the Central County Health Department or your doctor without your parents' consent and get contraceptives. So certainly adult women can be more responsible. If you know you don't want children, take the pill, go get the shot, yeah. Do what you need to do. But if you forget to be responsible and you've conceived, what about the rights of that, not just the baby, but the father too? What if he wants to raise his son or daughter? What then? So we need to revisit all of that.
Yeah, it's, you know, in the course of the conversation that we had the other day, one of the things that impressed me is you emphasized more than once that the city in particular needs to focus on what matters. And it seemed like, particularly under the previous mayor, that the council was getting into things, you know, trans rights and things that just stuff that didn't matter. And they need to focus on potholes and police and trash and fire and the stuff that matters, and not focus on the stuff that really doesn't help put food on the table, help people get jobs, and help people better their lives.
Exactly. Public safety is number one. And city council needs to stop, again, I say, using our tax dollars frivolously when we are 99 police short. We're short in the fire department. They need to provide funds to ensure that they have the resources to purchase the necessary equipment in District 1 and to include filling the jobs that are open. Like you said, the things that are important. And public safety doesn't stop there. We need more sidewalks. We need better lighting.
Right.
We need more talking crosswalks for our vision impaired community. There's so much that we need. I will be there to make sure that we don't just waste money. We need community services. We need to partner with our county partners to make sure that mental health services are available for our city and county employees, because they see a lot on their daily job. And we should also extend those to the residents of District 1. I mean, I just had a young man over here at the North substation commit suicide by police. I want my police safe. I want my community safe. So we need to direct those funds to make sure that happens.
Well, Ajne, I just wanted to make sure that particularly the Republican voters, because I know that there are a couple of the Democrats who are misrepresenting themselves and trying to mislead GOP voters and people in this audience who may live in District 1. And I wanted them to know that they have a conservative alternative, that they have someone that they can go, that they can vote for if they live in District 1. And so I wanted them to hear from you. If folks are interested, if they want to volunteer, if they want to help you, if they want to donate, they can visit electaugenet.com, and that's elect, AUJANAE.com, correct?
Correct.
See, look at that. I know how
and
to...
Let me tell you, I came into this race late. I didn't even file until the day before my birthday, the 5th of May. And so I'm finally getting everything together. So my website is up. The donation button is working. But I'm finna put out a lot of content so that you'll know exactly who I am when you go there.
Well, Ajne, again, the fact that you're endorsed by Kansans for Life will carry a lot of weight with GOP voters, and frankly, anyone who's not these radical leftists. And I wish you all the best. I think you're very practical, and that should appeal to anyone, right, left, center. That should appeal, because I think right now there's just too much divisiveness. And like you said, we need to focus on what matters. And I wish you the best of luck. I hope that you emerge from the primary, and we'll do what we can to help you. All right, my friend?
I appreciate it so very, very much. A shout out to Kansans for Life. Hello, everybody. And I'm so excited. Thank you so much everything, John.
Wish you the best of luck, Angele. We'll take a quick break, and then I want to hear what you think. Our studio lines are open. 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. Donate to her. ElectAngene.com. We'll be back right after this.
Hey, you lucky people out there. This is Kevin Sorbo. You're listening to John Whitmer Show with John Whitmer on KNSF. Have a wonderful, God bless day.
Your phone call is welcome at 869-1330. This is the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Well, we've had a great show. This has been a good one. We don't have a whole lot of time. Studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. Would love to hear from you. Don't forget, two great events coming up on the 5th of August. We've got the Guy Benson dinner at Union Stockyards, and then the 10th we'll be broadcasting live, thanks to Hunter Larkin and the Larkin Company down at AFP's offices at Union Station, where my guests will include the great one, Mark Levin. We'll have a little, I don't like to call it a debate. How about we call it a butt whooping? where Dion Leffler and I will go head to head. And then Congressman Ron Estes will be with us. Well, we'll probably, I'm sure we'll have more guests, but we're going to try and do everything live and in studio, other than Mark Levin. That'll be on a phone. But everybody else will be live at AFP so that the audience who's there, because last time we had, what, 40 people, 50 people?
Yeah.
Big crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But that way, everybody who's there can interact. We'll have them on the air. They can talk to the guests. But it was kind of fun, the last one. So AFP really loved it. I know that the folks at Eck Insurance were happy, and that's, I'm glad to have Lark and Company sponsoring this one.
Good turnout. I'm looking forward to all the guests that you're going to have on.
Yeah, so it should be good. The Dion thing, I mean, when I read that op-ed, I called him and I said, Dion, you know, you just keep saying this crazy stuff. Why does he keep writing these op-eds like this? They're just crazy stuff.
This isn't your daddy's Wichita Eagle.
No, well, it's gotten worse. And the sad part is he didn't used to be. I mean, when I was in the legislature, he did more on the journalism side. He wasn't, you know, so far left. He's gone further to the left as he's become more of a. When he went into the editorial side of things. And it's just, this has just gotten so far out of what his traditional rhetoric was. And for him to, you know, call it ethnic cleansing just because we support immigration policies. I mean, for those of you who don't know what he said, he basically said that immigration policies hide behind the tattered flag that is legal versus illegal. And yeah, I mean, he basically went on to say, if you support President Trump's policies, you're a racist. And, you know, it is what it is. But, oh, well, yeah, at any rate, we will have a thorough discussion on that and no doubt his next editorial on the TED. So in the meantime, have a great week and carry on, fellow deplorables.